Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live, Saturdays from 9 to noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio 102.7 FM in BC, Canada. For more information, check out www.vcn.bc.ca/redeye. Here's Jane Williams.
Canadians generally believe that we are immune from the kind of egregious tactics used by the CIA to influence and often overthrow democratically elected governments. Yet, in 1963, top-ranking U.S. diplomats in Ottawa, along with officials from the Pentagon and the State Department, several with close ties to the CIA, were involved in a successful campaign to oust John Diefenbaker from office. Recently, Press for Conversion, the newsletter of the Coalition to Oppose the Arms Race, dedicated an issue to cataloging CIA-related intrigues around the globe, including the anti-Diefenbaker campaign. I'm joined on the phone now from Ottawa by Richard Sanders, editor of Press for Conversion. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, hi.
Now, what were the events that led up to Diefenbaker's defeat in 1963?
Well, I think that they were campaigning for quite a while against Prime Minister Diefenbaker, but things really came to a head in, finally culminated in January of 63, and the number of tactics were used. There was this campaign, as you mentioned, the U.S. ambassador in Canada and some of his top-ranking assistants, they fueled a plot amongst the Canadian Armed Forces, and they also did a lot of work to manipulate the Canadian media to turn people against Diefenbaker and to turn people in this country towards a pro-nuclear weapons stance, because the Americans were bound and determined to get nuclear warheads into Canada, and Diefenbaker was against that. That was the prime reason for this plot or this campaign.
What were some of the specifics of the campaign?
Well, within the Canadian military, there was a guy named Lee, Bill Lee. He was a RCAF wing commander, and he and NORAD's number two man, who was a Canadian Air Marshal Roy Sleeman, they did a lot of work. Bill Lee actually called it a flat-out campaign. And I'll quote from Bill Lee. He said, "We identified key journalists, business and labor, key Tory hitters and liberals. We wanted people with influence on members of cabinet. In the end, the pressure paid off." And what Bill Lee did was to bring people, some of the ones that I mentioned, you know, journalists and members of parliament and cabinet members, they would fly them down to NORAD headquarters, and then they would brief them there on pro-nuclear policies and whatnot. There was also the U.S. ambassador and his key people would hold these off-the-record briefing sessions with Canadian journalists, including people that we still know, they're still around, like Charles Lynch. And so they would go and meet with the U.S. ambassador, who had a long history of CIA connections, and other people in the U.S. government. They would go to these briefing sessions where they would listen to hours and hours of anti-Diefenbaker talk from the U.S. embassy. But things came to a head in January of 63. A General Norstad retired on January 1st, 1963, and then on January 3rd, he passed through Ottawa, and he spent a few hours here, and he gave a news conference where he denounced the Canadian position, which was against nuclear weapons. This then gave fuel to Lester Pearson's position. Pearson changed the policy and said that the Liberal Party, if elected, would accept nuclear weapons into Canada. And that was on January 12th. Then on January 30th, the thing that really was like the final blow in the campaign was that the U.S. State Department issued a press release which called Diefenbaker a liar and denounced the Canadian government. And people like Ed Ritchie, former Undersecretary of State for Foreign Affairs, said it was as deliberate an attempt as ever made to bring down a foreign government. And Diefenbaker said, this action by the State Department of the U.S. is unprecedented. It constitutes an unwarranted intrusion in Canadian affairs. Canada will not be pushed around or accept external domination or interference in making its decisions. Charles Ritchie, who's another key person in the Diefenbaker cabinet, said, an absolute outrage, the most blatant, heavy-handed, intolerable piece of bullying. And a year or so later, in describing this incident, McGeorge Bundy, who was Kennedy's national security advisor, sent a memo to Johnson, President Johnson at the time, and said, George Ball and I knocked over the Diefenbaker government by one incautious press release. So what happened was, when they put out this press release, which called Diefenbaker a liar, and which said that Canada had to accept nuclear weapons, the media, which had been primed by all this propagandizing by the U.S. Embassy and their people, the Canadian media just went crazy over this press release, and it was like a bombshell. And within a few days, I think it was February 5th, the Canadian government fell. Pearson called for a vote of non-confidence in Parliament, and Diefenbaker had a minority government, and his government fell.
That's an incredible story. And then where was the CIA in all this?
Well, I mean, we know about the CIA, campaigns and efforts to overthrow governments, like in Guatemala in 54, and Iran in 53, and Chile in 73, et cetera, et cetera. All these different incidents where we know it was an outright CIA campaign. In this case, we can't really say that it was a CIA orchestrated campaign, but it was certainly an American-backed plot. Some of the key players in this plot, like the U.S. ambassadors during this period, there were two U.S. ambassadors, and they both had connections to the CIA, and this General Norstad, who I mentioned, who gave this media conference on January 3rd, he was actually... he was on a small committee which drafted the National Security Act, which created the CIA and the National Security Council back in 1947, and he was in military intelligence in 1940. He was responsible for planning the nuclear bombing of Japan. There were the key people that were involved, the key Americans that were involved in this campaign, in this plot to get rid of Diefenbaker. They had very strong connections with military intelligence and CIA. It's one another good quote is from Robert Kennedy, and he said about his brother John F. Kennedy. He said, "My brother really hated only two men in all his presidency. One was Sukarno, the other was Diefenbaker." So you can imagine the degree of hatred between Diefenbaker and. And President Kennedy was pretty strong.
Now, you already mentioned Lester Pearson, who was the next prime minister. Now, he had quite a reputation as an international peacemaker, but you said that what he did in that situation really flies in the face of that reputation.
It certainly does, yeah. The image that people have of Pearson as a world-leading peace activist is really... contradicted by this whole incident. He, as I said, decided that Canada would accept nuclear weapons, and very quickly, within a few days of the new foreign affairs minister taking power, was John Martin Sr., or Paul Martin Sr., took power in 63 after the Liberals won that election, because there was a vote of no confidence, the government fell, they immediately called an election, the Liberals won that election. Pearson came to power, and then within a few months, we had nuclear weapons in Canada. By New Year's Eve of 1963, there were nuclear weapons on five different bases in Canada. When Pearson switched positions and switched policies and decided that Canada would that the Liberals would accept nuclear weapons. Trudeau denounced Pearson as the unfrocked priest of peace, and he then refused to run for the Liberals in the next election, which he had promised. You know, he was committed to running for the Liberals, but then when this happened, he denounced Pearson and refused to run. And I also heard that Lloyd Axworthy did the same.